political bodies exist to secure responsible government and to execute the will of the people. Instead of instruments to promote the general welfare, they have become the tools of corrupt interests which use them impartially to serve their selfish purposes. Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. To destroy this invisible government, to dissolve the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the first task of the statesmanship of the day.
I appeared before the Congressional Committee, the highest representation of the American people, under subpoena to tell what I knew of activities which I believe might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship. The plan as outlined to me was to form an organization of veterans, to use as a bluff or as a club at least, to intimidate the government and break down our democratic institutions. The upshot of the whole thing was that I was supposed to lead an organization of 500,000 men, which would be able to take over the functions of government. As it then seemed to me to be getting serious, I felt it was my duty to tell all I knew of such activities to this committee.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
We needed one thing, which our own resources could not make available to us. That vital need was the information available in Washington from the intercepted dispatches, which told when and where Japan would probably strike. I did not get this information. It is my conviction that action by the Navy Department in furnishing me the information from the intercepted messages would have altered the events of December 7, 1941.
We take you now to Washington.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. On infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency, and that means basically that there is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take.
The president's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark. I was on Stemmons Freeway earlier, and even the freeway was jam-packed with spectators waiting their chance to see the president as he made his way toward the trademark. It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by, please. There has been a shooting. Parkland Hospital has been advised to stand by for a severe gunshot wound. The president's car is now going past me. The limousine is now traveling at a very high rate of speed. Secret Service men standing up in the limousine. They are armed with submachine guns. It appears as though someone in the limousine might have been hit by the gunfire.
The presidential car coming up now. We know it's the presidential car. You can see Mrs. Kennedy's pink suit. There's a Secret Service man, spread eagle, over the top of the car. We understand Governor and Mrs. Connolly are in the car with President and Mrs. Kennedy. We can't see who has been hit, if anybody's been hit, but apparently something is wrong here. Something is terribly wrong. I'm in behind the motorcade, trying to follow them. It looks as though they're going to Parkland Hospital. Secret Service man is still spread eagle over whoever is in the car, the President and Mrs. Kennedy, and as we understand, Governor and Mrs. Connolly. At this point, it looks as though it could have been one or two or even all of the people within the car may have been the victims, may have been struck by shots. We don't know.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
It is my duty to the American people to report that renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
Johnson said, we may have to escalate, and he put forward a resolution, the language of which gave complete authority to the president to take the nation to war. The Tonkin Gulf Resolution. And events afterwards showed that our judgment that we've been attacked that day was wrong. It didn't happen.
Colonel North, in your work at the NSC, were you not assigned at one time to work on plans for the continuity of government in the event of a major disaster?
Mr. Chairman,
I believe that question touches upon a highly sensitive and classified area, so may I request that you not touch upon that, sir?
I was particularly concerned, Mr. Chairman, because I read in Miami papers and several others that there had been a plan developed by that same agency, a contingency plan in the event of emergency that would suspend the American Constitution. I was deeply concerned about it and wondered if that was the area in which he had worked.
May I most respectfully request that that matter not be touched upon at this stage?
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge, a new era.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
We have a problem here. We have a hijacked aircraft headed towards New York, and we need you guys to, we need someone to scramble some F-16s or something up there to help us out.
Is this real world or exercise?
No, this is not an exercise, not a test.
Third aircraft hijack heading towards Washington.
I think we need to scramble Langley right now.
Are we going to shoot him down if they got passengers on board? Have they talked about that?
Do we want to think about scrambling aircraft?
Oh, God, I don't know.
That's a decision somebody's going to have to make probably in the next 10 minutes.
You know, everybody just left the room.
This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
That's the scene at this moment at the World Trade Center. Stan Daler from ABC's Good Morning America is down in the general vicinity. Dan, can you tell us what has just happened?
Yes, Peter, it's Don Daler down here. I'm four blocks north of the World Trade Center. The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed. The entire building has just collapsed as if a demolition team set off. When you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, it folded down on itself and it is not there anymore. Completely collapsed.
The whole side has collapsed?
The whole building has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed?
The building has collapsed.
That's the southern tower you're talking
about.
The second tower, and that's what you're looking at now. Again, this was not very long ago, 10, 15 minutes ago. The second tower, it almost looks like one of those implosions of buildings that you see.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself. Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Anybody who's ever watched a building being demolished on purpose knows that if you're going to do this, you have to get at the under infrastructure of a building and bring it down.
From my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in. And as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed. That didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later that the structure was weakened enough that all of the floors collapsed.
It looks like there's nothing there except for a hole in the ground.
Basically, that's right. The only thing you could see from where we were was a big gouge in the earth and some broken trees. We could see some people walking around in the area, but from where we could see, there wasn't much left.
Any large pieces of debris at all?
No, there was nothing that you could distinguish that a plane had crashed there.
Smoke, fire?
Nothing. It was absolutely quiet. It was actually very quiet. Nothing going on down there, no smoke, no fire.
The debris here is spread over a 3 to 4 mile radius, which has now been completely sealed off and is being treated, according to the FBI, as a crime scene.
We made it outside. We made it about a block.
We made it at least two blocks, and we started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like if they had detonated.
They planned
to take down a building.
All the way down. I was watching it and running. Just ran up. And then you just saw this cloud of shit chasing you down.
Couldn't
outrun it. I jumped behind a battalion car. I hit under the car. It was waiting to die.
During the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
I am Major General Albert Stubblebine,
I don't know exactly what hit it, but I do know from the photographs that I have analyzed and looked at very, very carefully, it was not an airplane. For one thing, if you look at the hole that was made in the Pentagon, the nose penetrated far enough so that there should have been wing marks on the walls of the Pentagon. I have been unable to find those wing marks. So where were they? Did this vessel, vehicle, or whatever it was, have wings? Apparently not, because if it had wings, they would have made marks on the side of the Pentagon. If the facts don't match, what did happen?
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
There will be no going back to the era before September the 11th, 2001, to false comfort in a dangerous world.
Howard Dean recently seemed to muse aloud whether you had advanced knowledge of 9/11.
Yeah. Look, there's time for politics. And, you know, it's time for politics. And it's an absurd insinuation.
I think the people understand I'm a war president. I make decisions here in the Oval Office in foreign policy matters with war on my mind. And again, I wish it wasn't true, but it is true.
On September the 11th, enemies of freedom committed an act of war against our country.
And I came out in what is believed to be the entrance or the place of initial impact. While I was coming out of the Pentagon, I didn't see any evidence of metal, airplane seats, luggage. Nothing that would give me any indication that it was a plane that had hit the building. I did not have jet fuel over my body. My son didn't have jet fuel over his body. The people that I helped didn't have jet fuel on their body. There was nothing on the inside that would give me any indication that there was a plane on that particular day that hit the building. Most of the people that were in the area where I was located, and again, I did ask because I, maybe I was off in my judgment, but in speaking with everyone, it was conclusive that no one else in the area where I was located had seen any parts of planes or luggage or baggage or anything of that nature.
Is Osama bin Laden in Tehran?
Your question is laughable.
Why?
The U.S. government has invaded Afghanistan in order to arrest bin Laden. They probably know where bin Laden is. If they don't know where bin Laden is, why did they invade? First, they invaded. Then they tried to find out where he is. Is that logical?
What I think is that you didn't answer my question. Is he in Tehran or not? I'm asking you, you're the president of Iran.
I heard that Osama bin Laden is in Washington, D.C.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. He's there because he was a previous partner of Mr. Bush. They were colleagues, in fact, in the old days. You know that. They worked together. Mr. bin Laden never cooperated with Iran, but he cooperated with Mr. Bush.
Joining us now is Tom Kenny from the Urban Search and Rescue Team, part of FEMA, the Federal Disaster Relief Agency.
We're currently one of the first teams that was deployed to support the city of New York for this disaster. To be honest with you, we arrived on late Monday night and went into action on Tuesday morning. And not until today did we get a full opportunity to work the entire site other than the spot of church and day to which we were deployed. To be honest with you, we arrived on late Monday night and went into action on Tuesday morning.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
And we were in a building in which we were trapped for about 10, 15 minutes.
Are you talking about the... Did you go immediately to the Office of Emergency Management?
No, I went down to the scene, and we set up headquarters at 75 Barclay Street, which was right there with the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, the head of emergency management. And we were operating out of there when we were told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. And it did collapse before we could actually get out of the building. So we were trapped in the building for 10, 15 minutes and finally found an exit.
You reported to Peter Jennings that on 9/11 the World Trade houses were going to collapse. And how come the people in the buildings weren't notified? And who else knew
right.
about this? And, and how do you sleep at night?
Ma'am, I didn't know that the towers were going to collapse.
But you said on ABC video with Peter Jennings in an interview that you were aware that towers were going to collapse in advance. We'd like to know who told you the towers were going to collapse in advance, sir?
Well, the fact is that I didn't realize the towers would collapse. I never realized that.
We were told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. The World Trade Center was going to collapse. The World Trade Center was going
to collapse. Hi, my name is Barry Jennings. I'm 52 years old. I received a call shortly after the first plane hit. I got there, I had to be inside on the 23rd floor when the second plane hit. Upon arriving into the OEM or EOC, we noticed that everybody was gone. I saw coffee that was on the desk. The smoke was still coming up for coffee. I saw half-eaten sandwiches. After I called several individuals, one individual told me that to leave and leave right away. Mr. Hess came running back in and said, we're the only ones up here, we gotta get out of here. He found the stairwell. So we subsequently went to the stairwell and we're going down the stairs. When we reached the sixth floor, the landing that we were standing on gave way. There was an explosion and I was left there hanging. I had to climb back up. When I made it to the sixth floor, there was an explosion. The explosion was beneath me. Hess is yelling, what do we do now? I said, there's only one thing we can do, and it's go back up. Both buildings were still standing. Keep in mind, I told you the fire department came and ran. They came twice. Why? Because building tower one fell, then tower two fell. And then when they came back with all concern now, like, to get me the hell out of here. I was trapped in there for several hours. I was trapped in there when both buildings came down. All this time, I'm hearing all types of explosions. All this time, I'm hearing explosions. When they finally got to us, and they took us down, I said, where are we? He said, this was the lobby. And I said, you gotta be kidding me. Total ruins. Now keep in mind, when I came in there, the lobby had nice escalators. It was a huge lobby. And for me to see what I saw, it was unbelievable. And the firefighter that took us down kept saying, do not look down. And I kept saying, why? He said, do not look down. And we were stepping over people. And you know you can feel when you're stepping over people. This big, giant police officer came to me. And he says, you have to run. I said, I can't run. My knees are swollen. He said, you'll have to get on your knees and crawl in. He said, because we have reports of more explosions. I'm just confused about one thing and one thing only. Why World Trade Center 7 went down in the first place. I'm very confused about that. I know what I heard. I heard explosions. I'm an old boiler guy. If it was a fuel oil tank, it would have been one side of the building.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. And this monster is pulling. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Every nation, in every region, now has a decision to make. Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Mr. President, why are you and the Vice President insisting on appearing together before the 9/11 Commission?
Because the 9/11 Commission wants to ask us questions. That's why we're meeting, and I look forward to meeting with them and answering their questions.
Why you're appearing together rather than separately, which was their request?
because it's a good chance for both of us to answer questions that the 9/11 Commission is looking forward to asking us, and I'm looking forward to answering them. Let's see. I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And it said it must have been a horrible accident. But I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack. America's under attack. America's under attack.
Closer look tonight at another example of where, despite the conventional wisdom, there were people in the United States who actually were preparing to defend against the kind of attacks which occurred here on 9/11. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD for short, has been defending the skies over the U.S. and Canada for almost 50 years, 46 to be precise. USA Today reports that in the 2 years before the attacks on September the 11th, NORAD conducted exercises using hijacked airliners as weapons. And one target was the World Trade Center. Here's ABC's Brian Ross.
President Bush has said again and again that no one could have imagined what Osama bin Laden ordered for September 11th.
We knew he hated us. But there was nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government could envision flying airplanes into buildings on such a massive scale.
I don't think anybody could have predicted that these people would take an airplane and slam it into the World Trade Center, take another one and slam it into the Pentagon.
But that turns out not to be true. U.S. military planners did envision and practice those very scenarios. As reported by USA Today, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD, conducted exercises with fighter jets, simulating hijacked planes flown into the World Trade Center 2 years before the attacks. Pentagon planners also envisioned the attack on the Pentagon 5 months before it happened. According to this April 2001 Pentagon email, Air Force officials wanted a war game, having a terrorist group hijack a commercial airline and fly it into the Pentagon. Still to come are questions, big questions, about NORAD's response on the day of the attack. Why, despite all the exercises and the planning, Peter, jet fighters were not in place anywhere near New York or Washington.
Lee and I write in our book that we think the commission in many ways was set up to fail because we had not enough money. We didn't have enough time. We'd been appointed by the most partisan people in Washington.
So there are all kinds of reasons we thought we were set up to fail. We got started late. We had a very short time frame. Indeed, we had to get it extended. We did not have enough money. They were afraid we were going to hang somebody, that we would point the finger. They were afraid we were going to hang somebody, that we would point the finger.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, sir, you gotta come in and talk to me a second. I said, well, you're too busy. He said, no. He says, we've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq. I said, we're going to war with Iraq? Why? I said, well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda? He said, No. He says, there's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq. So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Senator Dayton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I also want to commend you for holding this hearing and the swift response to the 9/11 Commission's report. It is a profoundly disturbing report. because it chronicles in excruciating detail the terrible attack against our homeland, the despicable murder of so many American citizens, and the horrible destruction to countless other lives and liberties throughout this nation. And because of the utter failure to defend them by their federal government, by their leaders, and the institutions that were entrusted to do so, and because of serious discrepancies between the facts that you've set forth and what was told to the American people, the members of Congress, and to your own commission by some of those authorities. There's way too much to cover here, but I will begin. According to your report, the first of the four airliner hijackings occurred on September 11th at 8:14 a.m. Eastern Time. At 10:03 a.m., almost 2 hours later, an hour and 49 minutes to be exact, the fourth and last plane crashed before reaching its intended target, the U.S. Capitol. During those entire 109 minutes, this country and its citizens were completely undefended. Yes, it was a surprise attack. It was unprecedented. But what I find much more shocking and alarming were the repeated and catastrophic failures of the leaders in charge and the other people responsible to do their jobs, to follow established procedures, to follow direct orders from civilian and military commanders. And then they failed to tell us the truth later. It doesn't matter whether they were Republicans, Democrats, or neither. It matters what they did or did not do. According to your findings, FAA authorities failed to inform the military command, NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, about three of the four hijackings until after the planes had crashed into their targets at the Second World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the ground in Pennsylvania, which was not their target. The direct FAA notification of the military occurred regarding the first plane 23 minutes after it was hijacked and only 9 minutes before it struck the first World Trade Tower. It exploded into its target at 8:46 a.m. The second hijacking began, according to your report, 1 minute later. NORAD wasn't notified until the same minute that the plane struck the second World Trade Tower. It was five more minutes before NORAD's mission commander learned about that explosion, which was 5 minutes after thousands of Americans saw it on live television. So at that point, 9:25 a.m., FAA's National Command Center knew that there were two hijacked planes that had crashed into the two World Trade Centers, and a third plane had stopped communicating and disappeared from its primary radar, yet no one at the FAA headquarters asked for military assistance with that plane either. This is just unbelievable negligence. It doesn't matter if we spend $550 billion annually on our national defense, if we reorganize our intelligence, or if we restructure congressional oversight, if people don't pick up the phone to call one another. And this was not an occasional human error or failure. This was nothing but human error and failure to follow established procedures and to use common sense. And unfortunately, the chronicle is not over. NORAD mission commander ordered his only three other planes on alert in Virginia to scramble and fly north to Baltimore. Minutes later, when he was told that a plane was approaching Washington, he learned that the planes were flying east over the Atlantic Ocean, away from Baltimore and Washington. So that when the third plane struck the Pentagon, NORAD's fighters were 150 miles away, farther than they were before they took off. By then, FAA's command center had learned of the fourth hijacking and called FAA headquarters, specifically asking it to contact the military at 9:36 a.m. 3 minutes later, your document records this following conversation, the FAA command center to the headquarters. Command center, do we want to think about scrambling aircraft? FAA headquarters, oh God, I don't know. Command center, that's a decision somebody's gonna have to make probably in the next 10 minutes. FAA headquarters, everybody just left the room. The fighter planes had reached Washington 7 minutes after that crash, and they were told by the mission commander, negative clearance to shoot the aircraft over the nation's capital. Negative clearance to shoot the aircraft. Yet 1 week after 9/11, in response to initial reports that the military failed to defend our domestic airspace during the hijacks, NORAD issued an official chronology which stated that the FAA notified NORAD of the second hijacking at 8:43. Long. FAA notified NORAD of the third hijacking at 9:24. Did you report wrong? FAA notified NORAD of the fourth hijacking at an unspecified time, and that prior to the crash in Pennsylvania, Langley F-16 combat air patrol planes were remaining in place to protect Washington, D.C. All untrue. In public testimony, before your 9/11 commission in May of 2003, NORAD officials stated, I assume under oath, that at 9:16 they had received the hijack notification of United Flight 93 from the FAA. That hijacking did not occur until 9:28. There was a routine cockpit transmission recovered at 9:27. Yet NORAD's public chronology on 9/18/01 and their commission testimony 20 months later covered up those truths. They lied to the American people, they lied to Congress, and they lied to your 9/11 commission to create a false impression of competence, communication, coordination, and protection of the American people. We can set up all of the oversight possible at great additional cost to the American taxpayers, and it won't be worth an Enron pension if the people responsible lie to us, if they take their records and doctor them into falsehoods, and if they get away with it. NORAD officials and FAA officials have been able to hide their critical failures that left this country defenseless during two of the worst hours in our history. And I believe that President Bush must call those responsible for those representations to account. If the commission's accounts are correct, he should fire whoever at FAA, at NORAD, or anywhere else betrayed their public trust by not telling us the truth. And then he should clear up a few discrepancies of his own. 4 months after September 11th, on January 27th, 2002, the Washington Post, Dan Balz, and Bob Woodward authored an insider's retrospective on top administration officials' actions on 9/11 and thereafter. They reported that very shortly after the Pentagon was struck at 9:34, quote, Pentagon officials ordered up the airborne command post used only in national emergencies. They sent up combat air patrol in the Washington area and a fighter escort for Air Force One. Looks very impressive. The president's acting swiftly and decisively, giving orders to the Secretary of Defense and on down the chain of command. Combat air patrol planes are patrolling Washington, directed by an airborne command post, all before 10:03 a.m. However, according to your commission, President Bush spoke to Secretary Rumsfeld for the first time that morning, shortly after 10 a.m. Based on White House notes and Harry Fleischer notes of the conversation, the commission's report states that it was a brief call in which the subject of shoot-down authority was not discussed. The commission then states that the Secretary of Defense did not join the National Military Command Center's conference call until just before 10:30 a.m. As you say, Mr. Co-Chairman, the situation is urgent when we don't get protected in those circumstances, and it's even worse when it's covered up. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dayton. The question was, we had four war games going on September 11th, and the question that I tried to pose before the secretary had to go to lunch was whether or not the activities of the four war games going on September 11th actually impaired our ability to respond to the attacks.
The answer to the question is no, did not impair our response. In fact, General Eberhardt, who was then the commander of North American Aerospace Defense Command, as he testified in front of the 9/11 Commission, I believe he told them that it enhanced our ability to respond, So it was an easy transition from an exercise into a real-world situation, it actually enhanced the response. Otherwise, it would take somewhere between 30 minutes and a couple of hours. There were two CPXs. There was one Department of Justice exercise that didn't have anything to do with the other three, and there was an actual operation ongoing. You have to realize that North American Aerospace Defense Command was responsible.
Mr. Chairman, begging your indulgence, was September 11th declared a national security special event day?
I have to look back. I do not know. You mean after the fact or before
the fact? No, because of the activities going on that had been scheduled at the United Nations that day.
I'd have to go back and check. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
A-Day, the start of A-Day, the start of the campaign called Shock and Awe, the original anticipation over the next 24 to 48 hours, perhaps as many as 3,000 Tomahawk cruise missiles, satellite-guided precision bombs, laser-guided bombs would be dropped at various military yes. targets, not only in Baghdad, around Baghdad, but elsewhere around the huge country of Iraq. It's now approximately 8:18 in the evening in Baghdad, in this part of the world.
The main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction. Turns out he didn't. Turns out he didn't. He didn't. He didn't. My answer to your question is that imagine a world in which Saddam Hussein was there, stirring up even more trouble in a part of the world that had so much resentment, so much hatred, that people came and killed 3,000 of our citizens. You know, I've heard this theory about, you know, everything was just fine until we arrived, and then, you know, kind of the stir up the hornet's nest theory. It just doesn't hold water as far as I'm concerned. The terrorists attacked us and killed 3,000 of our citizens before we started the freedom agenda in the Middle East. They were... What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack upon the World Trade Center.
Nothing. 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 And nobody's ever suggested in this administration that Saddam Hussein ordered the attack.
With respect to 9/11, of course, we've had the... story that's been public out there, the Czechs alleged that Mohammed Atta, the lead attacker, met in Prague with a senior Iraqi intelligence official 5 months before the attack.
Nobody's ever suggested that the attacks of September the 11th were ordered by Iraq.
What about this question of advanced knowledge of what was going to happen on 9/11? How clear are investigators that some Israeli agents may have known something?
Well, it's very explosive information, obviously, and there's a great deal of evidence that they say they have collected. A highly placed investigator said there are, quote, tie-ins. But when asked for details, he flatly refused to describe them, saying, quote, evidence linking these Israelis to 911 is classified. I cannot tell you about evidence that has been gathered.
And at that point, we were taken for another round of questioning, this time related to our allegedly being members of Mossad. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event.
I once put it rather pungently, and I was flattered that the British Foreign Secretary repeated this, as follows. Earlier times, it was easier to control a million people, literally. It was easier to control a million people than physically to kill a million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. It is infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people.
When I was growing up, my father, who had only an eighth grade education, worked for the Minneapolis Street Department. He told me one time when I was a teenager, he said, all politicians are a bunch of crooks. And I said to my dad, well, come on, Dad, you can't make a blanket statement like that. They can't all be. And he said, yes, they are. You know why? And I said, why? And in his simple way, he said, because they pay $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000, which none of us in the private sector would ever do that. You're not going to pay more money than what you're going to earn doing the job.
I want to thank the Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury for being here, both of whom lead important parts of our war. I want to thank the Director of the FBI and the Director of the CIA for waging an incredibly important part on the two-front war, one overseas
and a front here at home. Front here at home. Front here at home. We've seen the enemy in the murder of thousands of innocent, unsuspecting people. They recognize no barrier of morality. They have no conscience. As of today, we're changing the laws. This new law that I signed today will allow surveillance of all communications, including emails, the internet, and cell phones. As of today, we'll be able to better meet the technological challenges posed by this proliferation of communications technology. This bill met with an overwhelming agreement in Congress because it upholds and respects the civil liberties guaranteed by our Constitution. This legislation is essential not only to pursuing and punishing terrorists, but also preventing more atrocities in the hands of the evil ones. It is now my honor to sign into law the USA Patriot Act of 2001.
As evidence emerges about the backgrounds of those convicted of terrorist offenses, it is clear that many of them were initially influenced by preachers who claim not to encourage violence. We know this worldview, the peddling of lies, that 9/11 was somehow a Jewish plot, or that the 7/7 London attacks were staged. The idea that Muslims are persecuted all over the world as a deliberate act of Western policy. And we must stop the so-called non-violent extremists. We must be clear, to defeat the ideology of extremism, we need to deal with all forms of extremism, not just violent extremism. Governments that only govern for some of their people cause deep resentment. For our part in the United Kingdom, we are introducing new powers to strengthen our ability to seize passports and stop suspects from travelling, to allow us to strip British identity from dual nationals and temporarily prevent some British nationals getting back into our country, to ensure that airlines comply with our no-fly lists and security screening requirements, and to enable our police and our security services to apply for stronger locational constraints on those in the UK who pose a risk. My message today is simple. We are facing an evil against which the whole of the world should unite.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
There are at least two ways in which sit-ins and civil disobedience, at least two major ways in which it can occur. One, when a law exists, is promulgated, which is totally unacceptable to people, and they violate it again and again and again till it's rescinded. That brings me to the second mode of civil disobedience. There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. That doesn't mean that you have to break anything. 1,000 people sitting down someplace, not letting anybody by, not letting anything happen, can stop any machine, including this machine, and it will stop.
I have a dream. One day, this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution. And so it is to the printing press that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.